I'm Laura Vinroot Poole of Capital, and this is What We Wore. Tug Rice is a New York-based artist who's known for his sophisticated and cheerful illustrations. We collaborated with Tug for our third annual Dream Book, and we were thrilled to learn about his journey as an artist. I'm so excited to see. I haven't seen anything that you've created for us for our Dream Book, but I can't wait to see it.
Thank you.
I think Scott's keeping some of it from me.
It's fun. You know, it's such a... I haven't been to the store yet.
Yeah.
And so
I hope you will.
I definitely will. But so I'm having to imagine what the experience of shopping there is like, because that's really the goal, is like capturing the spirit of
yeah.
there. And it's funny because just recently I was playing around with some different poses and wardrobe for this one character that I'm drawing. And all of a sudden it was like Scott said, that's a Capital girl. It's like, you know, and I kind of knew too, like I could tell I had figured it out, and it had nothing to do with hair or, you know, shape.
Yeah.
Or it was just like something about this ethereal quality. I don't claim to understand at all what I do, or, you know, I just sort of like go into a zone and trust that it'll come together. And the great thing about working with great people like Scott is like, you really trust his point of view. So if he, you know, he's kind of shepherding it, and I never
yeah.
feel like, oh, you know, this is going to turn into something that it's not how I would do it. It's like, no, I want that collaboration, and I know that it'll end up being what it should be.
We were kind of laughing about Scott. He's just like this magical person that at a shoot, also, you could just grab like the ugliest clothes and just, he could dress somebody and make them look like, I mean, Bianca Jagger on her wedding day. Like, he's just so magical, and it truly is a gift.
It's like somebody using, you know, four crayons to create a masterpiece, but they just, they're like
yes.
the worst colors in the box, but they figure out how to do
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
But having parameters too is the best thing for an artist. You know, you can't have, I mean, I hate having just no rules or no brief. I have to have like, you know, I have to have some kind of structure, some rules.
And you've done a bunch of shopping things, I think. I think you've done Bergdorf. Did you grow up with your mom shopping? Have you seen people, and not only just shopping, just in the things that you draw, do you study those moments before you go into it?
Yeah, it was so weird. Actually, just the other day, it was yesterday, I went to get, I needed some white t-shirts for something. And I walked into Bloomingdale's, and I hadn't been into like a department store in I don't know how long, you know, and this nostalgia, just, I was flooded with nostalgia, just the smell of like shopping, you know, which I didn't know
yes,
shopping
I
had
do.
A smell, but
it's
different in department stores, because it took me back to being at the mall, which was such a thing growing up, you know, and it was actually really positive. It was a very happy memory. But yeah, I mean, I think I always am watching a little bit, you know, and particularly
yeah.
it varies where you go. I mean, the Bergdorf shopper is, there's such a, you know, you could make a New Yorker cartoon about that person, and you'd be generalizing and stereotyping, but there is kind of, there's some truth in everything. And yeah, you do. I pay attention to it for sure.
Where was that mall? Where are you from?
It was the Palmer Mall. I'm from Pennsylvania, you know, pretty small town. I always have a hard time kind of describing it, because it wasn't a town where everybody knows everybody. It wasn't one of those, you know, ultra quaint little towns, but it was a very kind of American, idyllic American suburb, where I kind of thought that's where everybody grew up. I didn't realize that's not the case. And it's actually till I was in college and I brought somebody home for a weekend, and she was from LA, and we walked in, and it was December, and I remember there was like snow outside on the roofs, and my mom was pulling cookies out of the oven when we walked in. And Lily's like, oh my God, this is like an ABC Family TV show, which doesn't exist anymore. But
I was going to say Norman Rockwell,
yeah, yeah,
but even funnier, ABC.
And so, of course, I mean, when I was really young, I loved it. But then, you know, when you're a teenager, when you're a creative person, and you're, you know, reading about, I remember reading like Laurence Olivier's memoir, or like reading a book about Vincent van Gogh, and the people who had these really scrappy backgrounds, you know, and there
yeah.
was nothing scrappy about growing up in the suburbs in Pennsylvania. You know, you went to football games on Friday, and you know, I mean, I just have all these memories of like riding my bike and very, very nice. And I'm grateful for it now. But I remember there was a period where I thought, God, it's so uninteresting. You know, like if you, I want to be a great artist, I have to have something.
Were you artistic? Was it, I mean, and was it always drawing?
Yeah, I was always drawing. I remember drawing really early on. I kind of talked late. So I think I was drawing before I spoke. And my grandfather had been an artist and he died when I was two. So I really didn't get to know him, unfortunately. But I really believe, because I was the only artist in my immediate family. My sister is very, I mean, she's good at everything, but, you know, interested in sciences and really excelled at, you know, math and all that stuff. And my parents, you know, appreciate art, but they're not artists. But I think knowing I had a grandfather who was an artist, I just never doubted that I could become
an artist. You knew it was a it was something that you could
become.
It's
like a predisposition. It was hereditary, I thought, and still think. And so it was like saying, you know, well, I have blue eyes. Well, you know, that's just something you inherit, or, you know, you're right-handed or left-handed, whatever. Because I see so many people kind of grapple with calling themselves an artist. And especially like, you know, when you're starting out, or maybe you've done something else and you leave that job to become an artist, which is really, you know, great thing to do. But I think a lot of people struggle with that word. They're really insecure about it. But I'm glad that I never was, because I just thought, well, of course I am. It's in the blood, you know.
Did you have pieces of his work in your house growing up?
Yeah, many pieces. And they were dark. They were kind of, they were all oils and they were really heavy. And I have a lot, you know, I have some in New York now. And I was very affected by them. I was really scared of a lot of them because they were really dark subjects. But just, I guess, to have that reaction to art as a little kid is so great, because even, you know, it just shows that you have a relationship with something that you're looking at. You know, I collect art and I love being surrounded by art, but, you know, his pieces are my favorites that I, you know, if there were a fire, that's what I would grab.
And he was a renowned artist. He was legit. Yeah.
Yeah.
And did you know that? Did you, I mean, I think he painted the president. He did.
Yeah. 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 And actually Norman Rockwell was supposed to paint the president and he was ill. And so my grandfather got the job. Yeah. I did know that, but I remember like learning it when I was a little older and thinking, oh my God, you know, that's so cool. And just, I think also the knowledge that you can make a career as an artist, which so many kids, unfortunately, don't hear that growing up. They have parents that are telling them, you know, they've got to do something else. They've got to, you know, become a lawyer or doctor or whatever.
I'm a painting major.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Good.
Yes, I have heard that.
Yeah. I think most people do. And honestly, I think anybody who tells you that is trying to protect you and they're trying to save you from a, you know, what could be a really hard, you know, not to say battle, but it's a tough business like anything. But I was glad that I had a role model so close to me, even though I didn't know him, that showed me, no, you can do this, you know, because he quit his job at Bethlehem Steel to become an artist full time. And it worked. That was a great lesson.
Was he self-taught?
Yeah.
Wow. That's remarkable. Did you hear about your grandfather from people in the town and that they knew him? And
yeah. And you know, you'd run into people who had bought, you know, some of his work or things.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's, you know, you realize, I mean, now when you're surrounded by creative people, it's not that unique, but you realize that in most parts of the world, to choose to do that as a living is really rare.
Yes, and brave.
And brave, yeah, really brave. So I really, you know, commend anybody who does it, who makes that decision. And yeah, I think it's like an anomaly kind of in a small town in particular.
Any stories you heard about him growing up that were important to you?
Well, I just remember hearing later on that he used to, you know, all his notebooks in school, he was drawing in. And I think there was like a drawer that was locked that eventually, not that long ago, somebody was able to pull open and there were like notebooks from high school where he was drawing. And so that's good. He did like his yearbook in high school and stuff. So it was obviously started early. And again, it was just kind of proof that like there might be something to this genetic I mean, there's so many athletes who, you know, are the sons or grandsons of athletes and, you know, think, well, maybe they're just exposed to it early on. And so that's just what they know. But I don't know. I kind of think that there's something to it.
In high school, what did you think you were going to do?
Well, I never studied art. I never took an art class. I think I had this instinctive feeling that if I studied it, I would get really insecure about it, really self-conscious, which I think is true. I mean, I kind of know myself well enough to know. And that sort of did happen when so I studied acting, and I went to a performing arts high school, where you chose a major, and half the day was academic classes, and half you were studying, music or theater or painting or figure skating or whatever it was. And I chose to study theater. And it was a, it was kind of an intense, very academic theater program where you're reading plays and reading a lot of plays and writing about them and talking about them. And then from there, I went to Carnegie Mellon and studied acting there, which is a, super intense program. So it was really kind of every day for like, 8 years.
And did you love it?
Yeah, I really did. But I was interested in the sort of interested in like the pulling back and looking at the history of training and all of that. Like I have conflicted feelings about studying art formally, because I did love it. I loved, learning how to speak and how to move, which of course we all do. We all learn as kids, but learning how to do it with intention and how to transform yourself to, be somebody else. And I found it all fascinating. And there's a, I forget who said it. It was like Eva Le Gallien or some famous actor or actress said, I think actors should be like tightrope walkers, where only the most highly trained should be able to go out on the stage. Like, I do kind of love that, because I don't know, I there is, yeah, there's so much to learn. But I also know that I did lose some of my freedom to be courageous in choices as an actor. And you it's very hard to unhear teachers, saying, that's not the right way to do it. Or so I'm glad then with illustration, it wasn't something I ever studied. But the, the negative aspect of that is you do forfeit a lot of information, which maybe would be
You
great
could
to
have
have.
used.
Yeah, like it'd be nice to know about colors and things. But also, there's nothing like, another great quote, there's nothing like the amateur approach. And yeah, so I think I kind of feel like for me, it's kind of one or the other. Like, I either want to just go full 1,000% in and learn everything I can and be really interested in it, or go based on instinct and have a more visceral approach to the work.
And so then when you graduated from Carnegie Mellon, did you move to New York and start acting? And were you successful?
Yeah, I kind of thought, well, this is what it is. It's auditioning, and then you get a show, and you go out of town, and you do a show for, I don't know, 2 months or something, and then come back and you audition. And it was working. Everything was going well, and I was working on a lot of readings in the city, and like my network was building, and I was starting to kind of cross off projects that I wanted to do. I think every actor has like a list, especially when you do classics, you have a list of roles or plays that you really want to work on. And I was starting to kind of check some of those off, and I felt like I could kind of see into the future a little bit. Like, if especially if I was working on a project where I was one of the younger ones in a cast, and then you're seeing people, sharing the dressing room, and they're, a lot older. And I thought, this is so beautiful, actually, to still be doing that, and really to be doing something that probably we've all wanted to do in this room since we were really young. But I think I also felt like I wanted to be surprised by my career and by artistic opportunities, and I like the idea of something that moved a little faster. I mean, there are certainly illustration jobs that take a long time, but generally speaking, it's pretty quick turnarounds. And so when it happened, and I could kind of compare the life of being an actor and the life of being an illustrator, it's kind of like a no-brainer. I thought, this is just such a better fit for me.
So was it always theater that you did?
Yeah. Again, it's like I was interested in history always, even as a kid, and interested in the past. And I mean, like my first memories of clothes, it's like I was interested in dressing and clothing, because dressing for an occasion was like, it felt like you were almost dressing like in the past. Did you know? Because when I was growing up, it's like I was so uninterested in the present. I thought only all the good things happened in the past. Like, because you read these little picture books, and they're always in like, period clothes and stuff. So, you see like men's suits, which haven't changed much in a century. And so when there was an occasion for, you know, my parents to be dressed up or something, it felt like very important, and it felt like you were almost time traveling, which I think was like what I
Yeah.
found interesting about it.
I totally agree with that.
And it,
It's like my favorite thing, and my references, and I mean, anytime I really love something, it's because it reminds me of this photograph I saw of my mom one time, or this babysitter I had that was so cool. And I completely agree with
Well,
that.
there's so much like, you know, sense memory with like, you know, say with perfume or with food or something. And I think with clothes too, like I can remember like clothing that my parents wore, you know, going to church or something, which was an occasion that I never like, I hated sitting through it. I just, you know, it was like torture, but
Did you draw? Because I was always drawing fashion on the back of the program.
I don't remember. I mean, probably. I feel like, I don't know. I should have been if I wasn't, but I never complained about having to dress for that. And it was like, I kind of remember when it shifted, when people stopped dressing to go to church.
Yeah, that was really
It
weird,
was.
wasn't it?
I know there are still places where people do. It's still like an event, you know, like it was. But
They say it was Bill Clinton, actually.
oh.
That's like, I mean, that's sort of the common lore in
Oh, well, that makes
menswear,
sense.
that was because he wore golf shirts. No, a president had never done that before. And Hillary wearing pantsuits, and that had never been done
Well,
before
that's
either.
exactly like the timeline
It's
kind of
probably
you
around the
bring.
same
Yeah,
time.
absolutely. Because I can remember
Isn't that weird?
it's so weird. It wasn't like a big part of our lives. We would go like, you know, some most Sundays, and my mom was always in a dress, and my dad was in a suit and tie, and then I would be like in a. I guess I had little suits. I don't really remember, but or at
Yeah.
least
Well,
like
you had a sport
a
coat.
sport coat and like khakis and dress
Great,
shoes, whatever, and a button down shirt. And then it did like shift, and I remember that's when like it really was like, well, what's the point now? I mean, you know.
So during this time moving to New York and acting, were you drawing at all?
Yeah, definitely. That was like the constant all throughout life. And I don't know why it never occurred to me that I could do that. I thought because I didn't study it was like something you can't just do. And also because I had gone to high school with people who were, you know, studying that every day
Yeah,
down the
sure.
hall, and they were so serious, you know, and like they were, I don't know, I mean, their work was so great, and they were so, it was just like, I thought, well, they know all about perspective and horizons, or I don't know, things like I didn't have any idea about. And so I thought it would be so fraudulent to try to do that. So I did it just for myself, and I would do it.
Well, you weren't selling it.
No, I never.
You.
Well, I did sell it as a kid. I had a, like, kids have lemonade stands, and I did have an art stand for,
Really? Of stuff you had made before, or stuff you were doing
I think
in
they
the
were
moment?
like existing pieces that I was selling.
Has your medium been the same the whole time? What's your medium?
Well, I mean, it was as a kid, it was like Bic pen and crayon, pretty much. And then it was just, you know, pencils. And my favorite thing to draw with still is a mechanical pencil, like, you know, the cheap plastic ones. But I did kind of start dabbling in watercolor when I was in my 20s, and I would be like, I remember I was doing a play in New Jersey, and I was backstage, and I had a chunk of time where I didn't have to be on stage, so I was in the green room, and there were all these coloring books backstage, and because, you know, you just have to like do mindless things while you're kind of waiting to hear your cue. And I would color, and then I would kind of add to the coloring book drawings, and kind of remember in that situation people leaning over my shoulder and kind of going, oh wow, you know, have you thought about like selling these? And I don't know, sure, you know, but I resisted it. And then as soon as I kind of like opened up that door, it's like, oh, this is really like, it was so, I don't know. As I was saying before, like everybody wants to tell you how hard it is to be an artist when you decide to do that. And again, I think that they're trying to help you and prepare you for the reality. And so you kind of, when you become an artist, whether it's an actor, a musician, or an art painter, or whatever it is, you just assume you're supposed to struggle. And you kind of assume like it's supposed to be really tough, and that you're supposed to like not work that much. And So I just kind of didn't really think about it. I didn't really assess how it was going or anything. I just did jobs I was hired for and then thought, this is just what it's going to be forever. But the difference then with illustration is it was just opportunities were coming up. And when I used to get an audition for my agent, my first reaction was always like, oh God, I have to do this thing. I have to either prepare now for something I'm probably not going to book that I'm going to really want,
Right.
or prepare for something that I don't want and I'm still not going to book, or I am going to book
Yeah.
and I don't want to do it. It was always fear.
Yeah.
Auditioning is so hard. And then the difference between that and then getting a call about an illustration project where occasionally you have to kind of audition for it if it's like a poster for something, or it's like, but that's really not normal. It's usually just like an offer. You're
Yeah.
paid to audition usually, which is also really
Right,
nice. So, and
exactly.
it was like people were asking me, my illustration agents were going, well, what do you think? Do you think, can you have time for this? Would it fit into your schedule? What do you think of the, and I just couldn't believe anybody was asking me those questions. Cause yeah, I was so used to kind of thinking of it as being a feeling like,
I'll probably fail, but I'll
yeah.
try.
And being like kind
Yeah.
of a pawn, having very little agency in my own
Yeah,
agent
very
career.
little control over it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean it, there is very little
And
control
that's just how it
unless
is.
you're
Like,
producing your own one-man show.
exactly, which a lot more people are doing now, actually, I think. Because
Yeah,
you
I
kind
think
of
you're
have
right.
to. I mean, you can't just wait around for, and even when the opportunities come, it's like every show closes,
Yeah.
eventually.
So what was the first project that gave you the confidence to pursue it full time and to really think of yourself as an artist or an illustrator?
Yeah, I think it was a fashion project, a menswear project. I started seeing illustration a lot more in magazines and newspapers and things. And I don't know, maybe I just hadn't been paying attention to it, but as I was kind of starting to think maybe this was something I could do, I started seeing it a lot more. And I think up until that point, there had been so much photography. But what was changing, and this is just, my theory, I don't know if it's true, but I think with everybody having an iPhone in their pocket, photography wasn't as magical as it
Exciting.
felt,
Yeah.
even 10 years before that. We all have these amazing cameras.
Yeah.
We're not all great with them. I'm a horrible photographer, but we have the tools, whereas like you can either draw or you can't. Anyway, I think that was one thing that, and also just the from a, a client's perspective, I think rather than staging a photo shoot with, hiring a photographer and models and makeup people and hair people and,
Yeah.
all that stuff, you could hire a
Yeah.
person to do an illustration where you could have anything, there's no
Yeah.
limitations. So I think the combination of those is why you started seeing it more. And I was really like appreciative of companies that were doing that because it was something I was interested in. And there's a menswear company, a tailor in London called Tom Sweeney. And they were opening up a shop in New York, and they did this campaign on social media where they were asking, I don't know, like maybe a dozen artists to interpret their, I think, spring summer collection. And it seemed like there wasn't much of a brief. It was just sort of, look at the clothes and create an image, and each week we'll share one. And I thought this was so cool. And I thought, this means that there's going to be more of this,
And also the fact that there are 10 people that can do it,
Yeah.
it means it's actually an
Yeah,
industry.
exactly. Yeah. And they were all so different. They were so
Yeah.
diverse, and like the pictures were so different, but they were all cool. And at the end of the day, you could tell that like it was all about the clothing. It was still selling the
Yeah.
product, which is what illustration has to do. So I told Julio how much I liked this. And I had no ulterior motives, although it's kind of sounds hard to believe, but I really just thought, because I really believe when you appreciate what somebody's doing, especially creatively, because we all second guess things so much. Really
Yeah.
nice to tell people, because otherwise you just like you don't hear it enough, and there's so
Yeah.
many decisions that go into everything that it's really nice to get that kind of feedback. So I just said, I think this is so great that you're doing this, and he wrote back and he said, oh, thank you, and I've looked at your work and I really like it, and actually one of our artists had to pull out. Would you like to step in and create something? And it was not a big project by any means. I mean, it was a social media, strictly social media campaign, and
Yeah.
it was not, I mean, it wasn't like a billboard in Times Square, but it was big for me at the time because it was the first time I was asked to create something for a brand. And because of that, it was a domino effect then where the next project I did, which was designing pocket squares for a Swedish company, that was, in the same world of men's style. And then I did stuff for Rowing Blazers and a lot of the other tailors in New York. And so it just kind of, if my first job had been something else, the second and third would have been something else too, I think.
And then tell me about your hand. Like, did it feel consistent every time you did it?
Yeah.
Because I know that sometimes when I start a painting or
Yeah.
something, and I haven't painted for a really long time, I'm like, oh, maybe I don't know how to do this anymore. And then I'm like, oh, actually, it looks just the same as what I
I
did 30 years
know.
ago.
Why? Yeah. I mean, I know it. You can kind of psych yourself out with that, especially the more you've been doing it. A friend of mine who's a really great hairdresser said one time that he felt like he forgot how to do it, and it was like he was at the peak of his career. He said, "I for like 2 years I just couldn't do it because I was so like paralyzed."
Psyching himself
Yeah, and
out.
I can understand that. I didn't really second guess it, and then when I started working with my agent Stephanie Pesikoff, she said she gave me the freedom to really explore it. She said, "Sometimes we tell people like you're all over the place, like stick to something, stick to your find a point of view." But she said, "You have that, but I want you to feel like you can also try new mediums." And so I started going to the Met, and I would just take pictures walking around. And like you were asking about looking at people shopping, and I love that, and I love it doing it at the museums, looking at people looking at art. So it's like the context of that was interesting to me, and also looking at art and looking at something like the Greek pottery or something, which I hadn't really looked at much up until that point. It just didn't resonate with me. But then I kind of would interpret it in my own way. And anyway, that's kind of how I developed a point of view, but also expanded on it. So now, I know like there's a color palette that I kind of use without really thinking about it, and there's a way that I draw a nose or eyes or whatever. But sometimes you have to shake it up, I think.
Do you see any connections between your grandfather's work and your hand and his hand?
I really don't. I mean, I would love to, and one day, like, I would love to really work on with oil and try to do like an oil portrait or something. But no, I mean, my work is really light and really it's illustration, and it's I think it has roots in like Art Deco. His work was very dark and it looked like old masters. I mean, it was really and that's what I love. Like when I go to museums, I gravitate toward that, but I don't have the patience for oil. And I don't know, there's just with the way you grow up, I feel like there's this kind of innocence in a way of my upbringing of growing up in Pennsylvania and stuff, that even though I work with brands that sometimes like that you're trying to create something really cool and really urbane and whatever, there's still this innocence and cheerfulness which I can't get rid of if even if I try.
You can't hide
Yeah,
that.
but I also think like in anything with style, it's like you need tension, and having a balance is like, yeah, you need both.
And it takes it in fashion, which you work a lot in fashion, fashion takes itself so seriously.
Right, so you have to have like something, some wink or like some playful energy, because otherwise it's just. And actually, I do remember in that kind of period where I was experimenting a little bit, I remember being told like it's getting a little too cool for school, like it's a little too, And I thought, okay,
That's funny.
that's not me, that's not authentic. So I don't hide from the cheeriness of it, That's just part of it.
And so, where's your studio?
Right here in New York,
And what's your medium?
I work digitally. Basically when I started working commercially, because and I started mostly for practical reasons. I loved watercolor and ink. I really loved that, and I was kind of fearless with it. And so many people would say watercolor is so difficult, and I'm sure if you do it correctly, it is. But I just kind of like slapped it off, treated it like acrylic or something. But I started working digitally because, particularly with editorial work, they might need something in 2 days, and that includes revisions. So the idea of scanning artwork, which was really hard for me to fit. I could never figure it out. I always ended up getting the texture of the paper scanned and I couldn't get rid of that, or photographing art and then fixing it in Photoshop and all that stuff. I thought, just cut that out, do it from the beginning on the computer. And those tools are just, you know,
they're amazing. They're, I mean,
life-changing.
I saw that the Hockney show in London, and you can see, you watch the whole process on the big screen of him doing it. It's magical.
I love that he has not shied away from it, because he could so easily dismiss it.
Isn't that cool?
And that's how I feel, you know, this AI conversation is so, I mean, I think about it every day, and it really does make you wonder, you know, where we're headed with in every profession. And certainly you can train AI to do my job. You could train it to do my job like me. You know, I could teach it to draw like me very easily. But I can't, and at first when it was all happening, I just wanted nothing to do with it. I just thought, I want to pretend like it doesn't exist. But then I thought, well, that's really hypocritical as somebody who works digitally. I mean, I think people felt that way about Photoshop and Illustrator when they came out.
Right, right.
And I owe so much of my style and my career to those tools. So now I'm like experimenting with, you know, how can AI be used in a positive way that doesn't take somebody's job, but maybe you cut down on some of your research, or maybe you use it to storyboard ideas, or, I mean, I know there are storyboard artists and there are researchers too, so that it's such a fine line.
What's been the most powerful moment in your career to date?
It's so hard when you're working on things, because you never have perspective in the moment. And I wish that I did, because I have worked on so many great projects with great people that then, like, a year or two later, I go, oh my God, wasn't that so cool? And I wish in the moment, but you're just trying to get it done. But I worked on a project for Stephen Sondheim's 90th birthday, which was ended up the last big project before he died, you know, that sort of celebrated his work. And I had just loved his work. I mean, he was like Shakespeare to me, except he also wrote music. I mean, just incredible. And all my life, I wanted to have some kind of creative interaction with him. I didn't even know, I had no idea what that would be, but I just, and as he got older and older, I thought, God, you know, I don't know, I don't think this is going to happen. And then there was this big concert, virtual concert, right at the beginning of COVID. And it was watched by millions of people, where every famous actor, you know, who had ever interpreted his music was singing his songs at home. And everybody was home watching, because the world had kind of shut down for a month, but we weren't all fighting yet. So it was like that kind of sweet spot.
Yeah.
And I worked very quickly on this project and had no time to consider the magnitude of it or the fact that he would watch it. You know, I just didn't even, I was just trying to get it done. And I was working the last day, still sending things. And then it happened, and there was a big reaction to it. And the Library of Congress has archived it as a, preserved it as a, you know, significant work of art in the 21st century.
Wow.
And it turned out to have this real resonance with people. And then he wrote to me and thanked me for my work on it.
Wow.
And then he died, you know, and it's like, I was just,
that's amazing.
Yeah. It was so, I still haven't quite processed it. Like, I have the here. And anyway, that was incredible. And there's been other, you know, other opportunities. Like I've mentioned that actors have lists, and I think I have lists, not necessarily of clients, but, you know, I've gotten to work on things with a company called Halcyon Days in England, and they create fine bone china and enamel products and silk products, and a lot of it is, they have all the royal warrants that you can have, and and so we create a lot of things. I've done collections for the Queen's Jubilee and the King Charles's coronation, and
it's really being a part of history.
I love being a part of that. Like, I'm always, I just, that is so interesting to me. You know, if I weren't creating things, I would be probably writing about the creation of things. I just love that. And I live in a building in New York where a lot of artists have lived here. George O'Keefe lived here in my building, and Peter Arno, who I'm reading a book about right now. He was a famous New Yorker illustrator whose work I just have always loved. And I just found out yesterday he lived there. He lived here too. But I love being part of that. And just kind of engaging with the past in a way. And I kind of seem to get in right at the tail end before people die.
Yeah.
at least I have some contribution to, you know. Yeah, I mean, with Sondheim, it was like, this is like making work for Shakespeare, and you know,
it's insane.
Yeah, it was really, really cool. And like I said, I'm still processing.
Is there anything that you once believed about yourself or your work that you no longer think is true?
I thought I had to wait till I was ready to do what I'm doing now. It's like there was this vague day that would come where all of a sudden I would go, okay, I've done my preparation and now I can be an artist. I can be an illustrator. And I think because I had studied another art so religiously,
yeah,
that is why I thought you have to do that. That's the process. And I'm glad that I realized that's not true. You know, I have this thing I always tell myself, which is like my masterpiece is in the future. It's not, you know, the project I'm working on right now doesn't have to be the, you know, King Lear or whatever, the Hamlet. And there may not ever be that. And that's okay too. But it's, if it is, it's definitely in the future. So I think nobody's ever quite ready to do anything. You have to just kind of leap into it.
Yeah.
You just prepare yourself to really struggle. And I think the idea that life can be easy in moments and that your work can be easy, not to say that it's always easy, and there are times when it's really challenging, but there are also times when I think I know I'm doing what I am supposed to do. And that is it gives you such peace of mind.
And that's you're in the flow and when you really are doing what you were meant to be doing, right?
Yes. And you're not pushing against the, yeah, there's this other thing I always say with a friend of mine, it's like swim downstream. And I think you kind of, you're trained as a young artist to really push and knock down doors and fight and show your resilience and your perseverance. But if you pay attention, you know, you realize like, and if you keep sharing things, there's going to be things that people kind of go, oh, do more of that. And if you pay attention to it, obviously that's the thing that people are responding to. And if you love that too, you found the thing you want to do.
What did you wear to the prom?
I went
to more serious issues.
Yeah, I know. My God, I went to three.
Oh my gosh, Todd!
I know. Two of them I wore. I'm always very much like if I can just wear a black tux with a black bow tie, no vest. That's
no.
I feel very comfortable in that. But my junior year prom, the theme was 007. So I wore like a ivory dinner jacket.
Oh, black wow, cool.
And I thought I think
nice.
Looking back, I didn't quite look as elegant or urbane as I thought I did. But
that's our first white dinner jacket. I like that.
Oh, there was not a lot of variety. I don't know what they wear to proms now, but when I was going, it was like, I mean, you really, I mean, I was like stuck out like a sore thumb. I mean, there's no variety. I mean, somebody wore a suit and it was like, you know, wow. And now I think, well, that was so cool to wear a suit. I mean, why not? And like, I remember one person had like a kind of a sheen to the fabric. Like,
okay.
You know, like
shark skin.
Yeah, something. And it was like, well, that's different.
Yeah. All right. I like it. Thank you, Todd,
oh,
so
my
much.
Pleasure.
Really appreciate it. And really anxious to get you down to visit us. We'd love to have you here.
Thank you so much.
What We Wore is produced by Capital and Balto Creative Media. The original song, Someone So Enchanting, was composed and performed by Britt Drozda. Please follow us on Instagram at What We Wore Podcast for additional content and show updates. QueenCityPodcastNetwork.com.